Okay. So, Mr. Derek Hopp, you are a military veteran. Do you want to tell me a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm originally from Oregon. Spent the first 12 years of my life in Portland and moved to Bend. I graduated high school, and then I went to school in Nashville, went to Vanderbilt University on a Naval ROTC scholarship. I did that for a couple of reasons. One, see a different part of the country, mm-hmm. away from Oregon, see what else is out there. Two, I really like the idea of joining the military. Mm-hmm. I guess for a lot of the same reasons most people do. Mm-hmm. The opportunity to serve my country and give back, the opportunities I've been given. Mm-hmm. Also, it's a great opportunity to, one, get school paid for, but mm-hmm. also to get some real life experience, mm-hmm. Both professionally and personally out in the military, and it's a great chance to see the world and experience new things, meet new people.
Absolutely.
And I chose the Navy for a couple of reasons. One, they gave the best scholarship, but mm-hmm. also, and probably more importantly, it seemed to me like the Navy does everything. Mm-hmm. So we're really only ones with ships and submarines. Mm-hmm. We've got the Marines that do the same stuff the Army does, mm-hmm. more or less, and we've got pilots that mm-hmm. do what the Air Force does. So it just seemed to me like the Navy had the best opportunities available. Mm-hmm. So I was in Vanderbilt for 4 years, and when it's my senior year, that's when I had to pick what community I wanted to go into, and mm-hmm. actually my first choice was EOD, Explosive Ordnance Disposal. And I wanted to do that because, you know, I was young at the time, and I thought, oh, I'll jump out of planes and go scuba diving and shoot guns, it'll be a lot of fun.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah. And submarines was my second choice. But then no one at my command really knew how I was going to get EOD. Mm-hmm. And one of the lieutenants, one of our instructors that I really liked, was a submariner. And he told me that if I chose submarines, he would get me into dive school. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know what, it's my second choice. It's not a bad community to go into. Mm-hmm. And I get dive school, so I'll do it.
Cool.
So went interviewed with the Admiral, got accepted, and after I graduated, I went to dive school in Panama City, Florida. Met some great people and had a lot of fun. Then went to Charleston, South Carolina for mm-hmm. nuclear power school, which is considered the most grueling mm-hmm. academic school the military has to offer.
Really?
And, I mean, I thought I worked hard in undergrad, but mm-hmm. I had no idea what it meant to work hard academically. So that was my first, like, real eye-opener and
really?
Working hard, yeah.
Okay.
Having discipline and time management. And so 6 months there, and then I went to what's called Prototype in upstate New York, Boston Spa, mm-hmm. Saratoga Springs area, mm-hmm. Where there's actually two active nuclear reactors that simulate being on, like, one simulates being on a submarine, one simulates being on a ship, but mm-hmm. it gives us an opportunity to learn hands-on mm-hmm. what it's like to operate a nuclear reactor and its auxiliary equipment, and to have a watch team that you're coordinating. Mm-hmm. So we spent 6 months there, qualified to operate the reactor, and then went to Groton, Connecticut for, I think, about 10 weeks for submarine officer basic school, which is just learning what we call the forward half of the boat. Mm-hmm. So all the nuclear and engineering stuff's in the back half. Mm-hmm. The forward half is your weapon systems, so sonar, radar, torpedoes, missiles, all that stuff. And we learned the basics of that, and then they sent us off to a boat. So I got sent to the USS Columbia out in Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. Not a bad place to be stationed.
Not at all.
And along the whole way, I met some great guys, and we ended up rooming together, so we had a
awesome
4-bedroom house.
Cool.
And had a lot of great people
awesome.
Living in, which was nice for long days at work and come home to some great people to hang out with, and it's Hawaii.
Yeah.
So I was on the boat almost 3 years. I've actually met the boat out in Guam.
Okay.
They were just finishing a 6-month deployment. So I cut the last 2 months of that. Went to Guam twice.
Cool.
Came back. We did some local operations. And then we went out and did what's called a surge pack or a mini pack. It's basically, we were out for 2 months and we just went out to do a mission. And so missions are generally top secret. Mm-hmm. And I can't even say where I went.
Yeah,
this one, just because it's different than most. But
yeah.
basically to support the global war on terrorism.
Okay.
So we were just trying to get intel, I guess, on the bad guys.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the main things that submarines do is called ISR, which is information surveillance reconnaissance, which is just collecting information about the bad guys, or just other people's navies and stuff.
Okay.
Let's see. We came back from that, and then we did a 13-month, pretty intensive overhaul period, where we actually took the boat in a dry dock and made some hole cuts and replaced a lot of equipment, updated a lot of equipment. After that, we brought the boat out, tested it, which
that'd be a little
can
scary.
Get kind of hairy. It is. We actually had a leak up near, I guess it's the number 2 periscope.
Yikes.
So at first I was kind of, I mean, it wasn't the water wasn't coming in enough to scare me, but I was like, you know, this is, we're still not at test depth, which is as deep as we go.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, I think this stuff should be fixed.
That's scary.
But it was kind of funny. All we did is we took a bucket, cut a hole in it, and put some plastic tubing up that hole, put the bucket up in the overhead so it would catch the water. And then the tubing went to a funnel that's there to collect water and stuff. And it would actually collect into a little puddle. And then when we would take, like, come up in depth, we'd take, like, an up angle, all that water would just start pouring.
Oh, okay.
The first couple times, it would catch me off guard, and I'd like, look around and figure out where the water was.
Oh, that'd be just, horrifying. Just see a little puddle of water just coming down the floor.
Well, I mean, it was all up in plastic tubing. Oh. We had it contained and everything.
Okay.
Just one of those things that...
It's still, I wouldn't like seeing that.
Yeah. After the fact, you know, I look back and beat my chest and go, oh, we're so tough, we're so hardcore. But at the time, it wasn't the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, I could imagine. So it just sounds like a pretty amazing experience. Sounds like a...
It is.
Really could make you grow as a person.
It definitely does.
And I could totally see why you'd want to do that in terms of... job experience. I think just any military service just looks great on a resume. So that makes perfect sense. Pays for school, get to serve your country, work with great people.
Do stuff that you can't do in the civilian world.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds pretty amazing. Cool. Well, that's a perfect little rundown. I'll just ask you some little more specific questions. So when and why did you join? What were the most important factors when you joined?
For joining the Navy?
Yeah.
I think, I mean, I've really liked the idea of wearing the uniform and serving my country and just getting to experience a lot of new things. But, you know, I won't deny that the whole money aspect also plays into
that
it.
Helps.
I mean, having school paid for and
absolutely.
A guaranteed job afterwards. That's kind of it.
Cool. Was family a factor at all? Do you come from a military family, or are you one of the first?
Not really. Actually, my grandma, who died when I was really young, was in the Navy.
Oh, cool.
Shortly after World War II. So that was, I mean, that was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, you know, I've had, like, cousins go to the Army, and a grandpa that... did a couple of years in the Army, but not a real strong military family.
Mm-hmm.
I did have a high school instructor that was a retired colonel in the Marine Corps that had a pretty big influence on me going in the Navy as well.
That makes sense. Kind of a mentor. Okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So I know you kind of brushed on it in your little rundown, but why exactly did you choose the branch that you did? Why did you go into the submarine force of the Navy as opposed to others?
The submarine force has a really good reputation as being some of the most competent and capable individuals in the Navy and sought after in the civilian world. Some of the more, I guess, like professional individuals. And also... I guess there's more secrecy to it in that we get to, the submarine force gets to generally do more secretive things because we're able to hide from other people.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it just seemed more exciting because of that, and also just more, I guess, challenging.
Yeah.
Knowing to be working with a reputable group of individuals.
Top secret missions. That's exciting. That's very, very exciting. What did you like or dislike about being in the submarine force? Anything? Big things, little things.
Yeah. So I always throw this kind of a disclaimer out there that no matter how bad I start talking about it, mm-hmm. I'm always very thankful that I had the opportunity to do it and given the opportunity to do it all over again,
mm-hmm.
just because of how much I got out of it.
Yeah.
Some of the things I didn't like, it was hard.
Yeah.
It was a real kick in the ass sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's a different mentality being on the submarine. At the time, women weren't allowed on submarines. Now they are.
Really?
So it was just guys. So it was just almost like a locker room mentality of, instead of like positive encouragement, it's generally like negative, make fun of
people dogging on each other.
Yeah, whoever's getting it wrong. And we're pretty hard on each other, which makes you tougher in the end. But at the time, it can be rough. It's not the funnest thing in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
And then just so that on top of now you're in a, steel tube where you can't really get your own space.
And not much alone time, is there?
Yeah, no, not so much alone time. There's no phone to use. And then email is, like, not always guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you lose all contact with the outside world, and now you're in this somewhat hostile environment.
Yeah.
So, most people stick with it mm-hmm. and finish out, but there's a couple guys.
They just can't handle it.
They can't handle it, and they quit.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Sounds
but,
like it could be tough.
I guess some of the good things, grow up really fast. I guess the whole military, but I can definitely speak from my experience, so they give you responsibility immediately,
mm-hmm.
which makes you grow up and realize that you can do stuff that you never thought you could do. And
mm-hmm.
So I got some really great opportunities. And for example, the first time it really hit me, I think I was 24, and it was when we were on that mission.
Mm-hmm.
I was standing on General's Watch, which is the officer in charge of the engine room, so mm-hmm. making sure that the reactor's operating,
mm-hmm.
stays critical, and to make sure that the propulsion goes, the lights stay on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually doing a tour of the engine room, and it kind of hit me that I was in a part of the world that I can't tell anybody I've been to,
mm-hmm.
and I'm in charge of maintaining propulsion, which is kind of our lifeblood.
Yeah.
For 135 people.
It's a big responsibility. So,
yeah, I just thought, wow, the fact that someone trusts me enough to do that.
Yeah.
Of course, I've got a lot of competent people helping me out.
And, yeah.
Watching my back, making sure I don't screw up. But mm-hmm. it just made me feel really good.
Yeah, I could see how that, help you grow up very fast.
Definitely.
That sounds pretty amazing. So you went straight into becoming an officer,
yes.
Correct? How did you feel about it? How was being an officer?
It feels good, but it's also tough and humbling mm-hmm. at times.
Yeah.
Because, when you start out, you don't really know anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know some stuff, but not
mm-hmm.
as much as most of the guys that are now working for you.
Okay.
Got out to the boat, and, shortly after getting there, I've got a guy who's 10, 15 years older than me, working for me.
Yeah.
And he's got, 10, 15 years in the Navy.
You're just fresh out of school.
Yeah. And I'm supposed to tell him what to do. More like teamwork.
Yeah, yeah.
But, and then there's just, these guys that are, so we're about your same age, and they just know more than you because they've been on the boat for a year or two longer because they didn't go to college.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of, a little tricky to deal with, but mm-hmm. it's just, just got to be a real person. And,
yeah.
And everything seems to work out.
Cool. Sounds interesting. How do you think it affected your career? In what ways? Versus if you had just gone into becoming, or I'm not sure what the term is for not being an officer on a submarine.
Oh, like being enlisted?
Yeah, just being enlisted on a submarine. Like, how did it change your career?
I think
it gave you more responsibility, right?
It does. It gives you more responsibility. Right out of the gate, and mm-hmm. you're expected to know more, know the big picture as opposed to some of the detailed
mm-hmm.
aspects. I think, I guess I'm glad I did it that way. I think going enlisted, it can be hard,
mm-hmm.
But one good thing about it would have been that I would have got the firsthand experience of what it is to be enlisted, and then also get to experience what it's like to work for, you know, junior officers, and mm-hmm. figure out, okay, well, that's how I want to be when I become an officer. That's how I don't want to be.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I'm not sure if you might have like kind of brushed on it a little bit. Why did you choose to be an officer? Just the challenge? Just the...
As opposed to going enlisted?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to go to school
mm-hmm.
right away.
Mm-hmm.
And getting a college degree is
mm-hmm.
Part of becoming an officer. But also, since the Navy gave me the scholarship, it was mm-hmm. to become an officer.
Okay.
So, you know, more or less... had to go that way. Also, just some things I'd heard. You generally get treated a little bit better
mm-hmm.
as an officer. You
mm-hmm.
maybe you get a better place to sleep at night.
Yeah, that helps. How did it? You touched on a little bit how it affected your social interactions in the service. It seems like that could really change the dynamic between you and other people in terms of you being an officer. How exactly did it do that? You kind of brushed on it. How?
I'll say kind of specifically how it did was, and it goes back to how I kind of referred to the submarine as like a locker room
yeah.
mentality.
Yeah.
So I got a bad habit of like cussing and just being around guys. So being, I guess, a bit more vulgar and
yes.
my jokes.
That's
speech.
What happens.
And I actually had a girlfriend while I was on the boat
mm-hmm.
And she said that, you know, like for the first week or two when I'd get back from being underway, I'd have to like decompress and like I forget the term she used, but basically transition back to being in the normal world, like
yeah.
more dealing with civilians and stuff. And
yeah,
I even noticed, I guess like within the last year, I still had to watch how I spoke
yeah.
and try not to cuss so much. But
so that's a reality, swearing like a sailor. That comes
yeah.
from.
And I don't really know why.
Something about being isolated for a long time with other people.
Just seems, I think it's a way of releasing stress
yeah,
for whatever
totally.
Reason.
That makes perfect sense.
And everybody else is doing it.
Yeah.
So.
You just kind of become an artist of the curse.
Yeah.
The curse words. So you were a nuclear engineering officer. Why nuclear engineering? Was that?
Well, all of the officers on submarines, except for our supply officer, have to go get nuclear trained.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just part of, you know, what we want you to know how the propulsion system works.
Mm-hmm.
So on submarines, and that's kind of one thing that separates us a little bit more from other branches of the Navy, is we know more or less everything about the boat.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just kind of part of it. And also that, you know, going through the nuclear power school, it's just it's pretty respectable, and
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people in the civilian world that will see that on a resume, and
it's really highly regarded.
I'd be happy with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Right on. What were your duties and responsibilities? Is there specific ones that you feel like you want to talk about, or are there ones that you can? Or
sure. So kind of have like multiple duties at one time, and the first main duty is to get qualified.
Mm-hmm.
And first you get qualified in the engine room, and then you get qualified forward to drive the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get qualified, your submarine warfare officer, we just call getting your dolphins or your fish,
mm-hmm.
which is a pin we put above our ribbons on our uniform, and that's kind of the, like that's when you go from being a boy to becoming a man
okay.
in the submarine force.
All right.
So that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And then while you're doing those, we'll get different jobs. And kind of, so your first tour is the junior officer tour. And the main, I guess I would say the main goal of that tour is to learn kind of as much about the submarine as you can.
Mm-hmm.
So that then you're ready to build upon that foundation for
mm-hmm.
whatever job you get next.
Mm-hmm.
So like I was in charge of the electrical division. I was in charge of auxiliary division, diving division, the radio division. Those were all mostly like separate jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have like collateral duties, which aren't that cool because you don't want to get credit for them. It's
mm-hmm.
just you're the guy right there when someone needs you to do something
mm-hmm.
kind of deal. But I guess a lot of it's the same stuff. You're just in charge of a group of people, maintaining a certain set of equipment
mm-hmm.
and you know, keeping your stuff ready to go to sea.
Cool. How, I'm assuming they evolved over time, because you're, did they? Did
submarines? They
your duties, your responsibilities,
yes.
What you did, like, it kind of changed over time as you became more experienced?
Yes.
Is that?
So, like, for example, like, electrical division isn't the biggest division, and then, so it's generally given to, like, the junior guys,
mm-hmm.
and then, like, auxiliary division is one of, if not the biggest division, and it's got a lot of equipment on the boat, so it's just more to keep track of, more people to manage,
mm-hmm.
Stuff like that.
Okay. If you had to sum up your experience on the Columbia, how would you do it?
Ooh.
That's a tough question.
It is. I think I might just classify it as like a growing experience or
yeah.
maturing process.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I can just look back and see, and you know, think of what I was like when I first got there,
yeah.
and then how different I became when I right before I left.
Yeah.
Just a lot more confident and
yeah.
capable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. During your service, what was your biggest success and your biggest failure in or that you dealt with, not necessarily yours specifically, but you know, it was
mm-hmm.
what were the
I think I would consider my biggest success just getting my dolphins,
yeah,
and just because that just means so much in the submarine community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like for example, there was a guy who was in the auxiliary division,
mm-hmm.
and I'd just been assigned to be the division officer of that division. He didn't like the idea of working for me because I didn't have my dolphins yet.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, once you get your dolphins, then it's like, okay, now, you know, can't mess with this guy
yeah.
kind of deal. And,
yeah.
You just get more respect and,
yeah.
And a lot of confidence goes with it.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest failure... I guess I had some trouble when I first got to the boat, but my boss at the time, the engineer, just like pulled me into a stateroom and just basically told me I wasn't doing a very good job.
Oh, that's gonna be
and
tough.
He was worried, you know, that I wasn't gonna be successful
mm-hmm.
on the boat, and it just kind of rattled me for a little bit.
I bet.
And then I went and talked to another lieutenant that I had a lot of respect for,
mm-hmm.
and just to get kind of his perspective, and
mm-hmm.
he helped cheer me up and. Get me going in the right direction.
That's good. That's good. So that was kind of early on.
Yeah.
You're still kind of young and adjusting to things.
Yeah, and I think just like the whole, I mean, it was like that locker room mentality.
Yeah.
I think I had a little bit of trouble adjusting to that, so
mm-hmm.
I kind of,
mm-hmm.
I guess, like shut down and didn't really,
yeah,
like talk to people and
yeah,
and get stuff done.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, I guess, kind of weird because now I talk to the engineer. We're friends. And
yeah. It's just those things take time to develop those relationships and stuff, and I'm sure it takes a lot of time to be able to work in an environment like that, just in a little steel tube
yeah.
underwater. were there, this is only if you feel comfortable about it, were there any crises that you had to deal with, and how did that go? How did you deal with it? And that's only if you feel like talking about it. I totally understand if you, you know.
I don't know if I'd really call anything a crisis.
Mm-hmm.
One time, it'd be the...
You talked about the leak after you
oh,
did
yeah.
the overhaul. That
yeah,
sounded a little nerve-wracking.
Got that fixed. Was there anything else that was... I can't think of anything else that was really worrisome.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I mean, it wasn't that worrisome, but one time we had problems with one of our torpedo tube outer door.
Mm-hmm.
And so those torpedo tubes are, I think they're about 27 inches
mm-hmm.
maybe in diameter. So if one of those is open and you can't shut it, the submarine's going to go down.
It's a lot of water.
And our outer door, we couldn't get to stay shut, I think. So... they were like talking about, and I was one of the divers on the boat talking about having us go in and take like a look at it from the outside, and
mm-hmm.
Like technically we probably weren't really supposed to do that,
mm-hmm.
but we never ended up doing it. We got like professionals, I guess, to do it.
Mm-hmm.
One time that was kind of scary we were in port, and I was the duty officer, which meant I was the senior guy on board, kind of in charge, basically the captain's representative while everybody else is, you know, home sleeping. And I got woke up at like 3 o'clock in the morning because one of our watchstanders had some medical problems. I guess while he was talking to another guy, he just grabbed his chest right above his heart and like collapsed down to a knee.
Oh, no.
And, you know, nobody knew what was wrong with him. So I take him to the hospital, and I was like, you know, kind of worried that he had some medical problem we didn't know about. Well, anyway, come to find out, the doctor's like, hey, do you drink energy drinks? And he's like, yeah, I was drinking a Monster and blah, blah, blah. And the doctor said, stop doing that. It's going to kill you. And just because, you know, he's drinking too much caffeine and taurine and all that crap.
Yeah.
Just like got to his heart. And,
jeez.
And he was like 20 years old.
Wow.
So
that's scary.
Yeah.
I could see that being in a submarine in a, you know, locker room environment, underwater, isolated. You don't really get to see the sun a lot. It's got to be tough. Like, not sometimes I feel like you wouldn't know what time it was unless you had a clock or whatever, because you don't see the sun and
yeah.
Kind of want to start drinking coffee or energy drinks and that kind of stuff. I could totally see that. What would you say, what were some of the key moments or events of your career? What were the ones that really stick out to you and you feel like had the biggest impact on you as a person and the development of your career?
I would say, actually, like, graduating from dive school was kind of the first one. I felt like I gained some of the respect of our instructor, who was a chief, so senior enlisted guy. But then the other experience... I talked about being in the engine room, 24-hour mission, and then getting submarine qualified. And then there was this other time that felt really good. I was just driving the boat, going back to Hawaii. Nothing fun going on. Just a normal watch, not really doing anything. And the captain walks into control where you drive the boat from, and he comes up to me. Tells me I have 15 minutes to get the periscope depth, which usually takes probably like 45 minutes because we do it really slowly and we brief it and do all this stuff. And he tells me I have 15 minutes.
Oh.
And then he clicks his watch and walks out of control. I just start going through all the stuff and we get up there and I got to get his permission to go up. And I tell him, hey, you know, Captain, ships at periscope depth. I hear him click his watch and he says, very well. He tells me it was like 8.5 minutes.
Wow.
And I just felt so good. And he walks out of control. I just felt so good.
Well done.
I just, you know, got it done, you know, really quick and fast and safe.
That's awesome.
And a lot faster than he thought of, than he gave me to do it.
Yeah, that must have felt really good. Because when you're going up or down in the water, you have to account for the pressure in the ship, right? And you have to...
No, not really.
No.
Just because, like, the whole... it's so strong that it doesn't. I mean, it compresses, but not enough to have that much of a effect on our atmospheric pressure. But we do actually monitor atmospheric pressure. It can change. I mean, the main thing is that we can't see anything unless we have a periscope out of the water. So when we're coming up, we're listening for everything. You can't always
radar.
Hear. Radar is not even on. That's not until you're on the surface.
Oh, really?
So we're just listening with sonar.
Okay, all right.
And you know, in movies, you'll probably hear like this ping.
Yeah.
Like that's. I mean, that's made up. That's old school stuff.
Yeah.
But that's called going active, and we don't do that because it actually gives away your position.
Oh, okay.
So we don't do it very often at all.
Yeah.
So we're just sitting, listening for other people to make noise. And you know, that's where it can get dangerous, because if you don't hear someone, then you might not see him until it's too late.
Yeah.
So
that could be a little nerve-wracking. Okay, let's see. Is there anything, if you could do it all over again, is there anything you could do differently? I know it's kind of a weird question. You don't have to answer it if you don't want it.
I the only thing I could think I'd do differently would just be stuff that, well, now I know how to do it better. But that's, you know, if I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't know that stuff.
So yeah.
I think I'll just take the same path.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Well, okay, so I have So I have just these bullet points. I took your email with your little synopsis of your main events in your career. Are there any of these that you feel like you could expand on at all, or anything more that you would feel like talking about? I know, so you can't really talk about the specifics of your missions and stuff due to issues of legality and stuff like that. Totally understandable. But yeah, is there anything here that like you feel like you could expand on, or you feel like, you know, could help people understand what it's like to be in the military, you know, when they are listening to this interview, however long down the road?
I think, I don't know if any of this stuff specifically, but just like being in the military, at least especially being on a submarine, is just so different from the civilian world. And I think one of the main things, like being on a submarine, is pretty much everybody on board has like a responsibility in case of emergency that's gonna help ensure the safety of everybody on board. So we look at each other as, you know, I gotta rely on him and he's gonna rely on me. And so we have like more of a respect for each other, and we just realize that, I mean, there's just kind of certain things you don't joke around about. So I don't know, maybe it's just me, maybe it's most submariners, but there's certain things I don't really like people joking around about. And I guess, I don't know, it's kind of a like a pet peeve of mine that if I start talking about what it's like, because someone asks me and then they like interrupt like with some joke or something, and it kind of bothers me. I'm like, well, you know, this is something that's, it's a big part of my life and I took seriously. You know, if you're not going to, then I don't really want to talk about it.
That's
kind of a deal. So I guess if you were going to ask somebody about, you know, seriously about what it was like in the military, give them a chance to explain. And, you know, ask questions to get information, not to try and make light of it.
I mean,
unless they do first.
Then
it might be understandable.
So how, you've noted several times there's a huge difference between life on a submarine and life in the civilian life. How was it adjusting? Did it take a while? Was it tough?
It did take a little while, but then it just actually got to the point where like that's just how it works. It was no big deal. Like for example, a submarine usually operates on an 18-hour day. So when I'm in that 18-hour day, I would, you know, wake up, stand 6 hours of watch, have 6 hours to do like other, take care of my normal duties, manage my division and stuff. And if there was time, you know, relax or whatever, and then get 6 hours of sleep, and then start all over again. So you just get in a cycle where everything just kind of blends together and just kind of goes by so fast that it's just like that's how it works.
Just kind of get used to the grind. And then how was it adjusting back to living as a civilian?
It was actually a lot different than I expected. I thought it was just going to be that I would have all this free time and I was going to go do all these great things I didn't have time to do while I was on the boat. But when I got off the boat, I actually watched a lot of TV and I didn't do a whole lot. I just kind of like watched TV and went to work and just slowly watched less TV and kind of started doing that stuff I thought I was going to do immediately. It was just, I guess it took some like decompressing time. It was kind of weird.
That makes sense. You can just jump right into just normal life again, because it was just...
Yeah, I guess. And I mean, I felt like I had a normal life when I was not on the boat. Like, even though I was like assigned to the boat, like on weekends, you know, we'd go to the beach or go hiking. I just thought, I don't know, I just thought I'd immediately start doing that stuff all the time. Actually probably did it less and watched a lot more TV. It was weird.
Why do you think that? It's the decompression time you needed? You needed kind of time to process everything that happened? And
probably.
Yeah.
It's probably that. And then also, I didn't watch very much TV on the boat. I mean, because we don't have TV on the boat unless we're in port. And then being at home, I think I wanted to do other stuff. So I think I was like trying to catch up on what I've missed for the last couple of years. Like, what's going on in the world? You know, who's in office? Who's going to get elected? What are the issues?
Yeah.
And I just kind of watched a lot of news programs.
Yeah.
Mostly just trying to get caught up.
Yeah.
I think is what it was.
Yeah. And it can be kind of a comfort thing too, TV, you know. It's just, I kind of, like, for me, I just like to have it on sometimes just because it's like kind of comforting in some weird way. let's see. Is there anything else you feel like talking about? Any like interesting experiences or either, you know, in the service or in your training or after your service or...
Actually, so like after I got off the boat, I went to the University of Memphis to be an instructor in their Naval ROTC program.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, kind of like training future Naval Marine Corps officers, I started to realize some of the gravity of what it actually means.
Mm-hmm.
And started reading more and hearing like some quotes from people, and just realized like some of the responsibility we put on the military personnel, you know, one, to take care of each other is kind of the big one, but also like take care of the equipment and more or less like protect the country.
It's a lot of pressure. Did you notice a change in how people act towards you after your service? I've heard before that like after someone serves in the military, they've noticed like some people act differently towards them. Whether it's like a lot of people have like a unconditional like just respect and like positive regards, and then there's other people that unfortunately don't have that. They have like the opposite of that. Have you experienced those before, or one more than the other? I'm not sure. It's kind of, I think it's a lot less common today than it was, you know, 40 years ago in terms of the negative side of that. But have you noticed that at all?
Generally, I think everybody's been real positive.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people will say, you know, okay, thank you for your service, and like, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Kind of like what you do and whatnot. And, I mean, I appreciate it, but it definitely feels humbling. Because you know, I'm really thankful for the opportunity that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there's jokes that go along with it, especially being in the submarine force.
Mm-hmm.
Are there
any of them that you could tell me about, or you feel like talking about, or would you just rather?
Sure. Like, I mean, because you know, it used to be all guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, one example is like, you know, submarine goes on deployment. It's like a. Be like 120 sailors go down, 60 couples come up, stuff like that.
A little homoeroticism.
That
happens with any group of isolated guys.
I think the Navy probably gets it more.
Than
the branch.
Yeah, I've heard some Navy ones before. Is it one of those things that like it's more. You don't mind hearing it from your companions, your comrades and stuff, but it kind of bugs you when you hear civilians, people that haven't experienced it, kind of joking about it. It's
mostly it's the same stuff over and over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, come on,
let's
be original or get creative. And
I mean maybe
I thought it was funny at once, but I don't think it's funny anymore. So I'm like, you know, I try to ha ha ha, you know. That kind of thing.
Absolutely. That's interesting. Let's see, I was trying to think, is there anything else? I feel like you've covered quite a bit so far. That's all the questions that I have for you, unless is it anything else that you want to talk about? When we're submitting these, we can also submit documents or pictures or artifacts, anything like that, if you do want to send anything with that. Or is there any other stories you want to talk about or anything like that before we wrap it up?
I'm not going to think of any.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a lot of the stories, you just kind of, you had to be there.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Either it was only funny because we didn't have a whole lot of entertainment going on, mm-hmm. or maybe you just had to be there and mm-hmm. there's just too much explaining to go on.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some good times and then there's some bad times.
Yeah.
Just like anything else.
Yeah.
Met some really great people.
I'm sure there's a lot of inside jokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so
even
weird.
Even within, I guess, different groups within the military. Like the guys I went to dive school with, we had jokes that, you know, guys that didn't go to dive school didn't get.
Yeah.
I thought we were stupid. We thought they were funny.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
Yeah. How do you feel about the future of the military? In terms of its direction as its own thing and then your involvement in it? Do you feel like you're going to continue to be involved in it? And
I would definitely like to support, you know, people that are in the military and that have served,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of give back, because I've mentioned before, but I feel like the military has given me so much that
mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like I'm still in debt to the military and to the country, that I'd like to be able to do something, whether I'm a lawyer doing pro bono work for Navy veterans or
mm-hmm.
or just supporting
mm-hmm.
Like the Wounded Warrior Project or mm-hmm. Special Operations Fund, stuff like that.
You feel like you'd like to see a little more support for military veterans at home?
Maybe. I mean, I feel like I've definitely been given enough support.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the military's prepared me to do anything. Mm-hmm. So I kind of feel that, like, I didn't need it as much, but I realized that there's some people who obviously had, like, physical or mental wounds coming back from
mm-hmm.
Iraq and Afghanistan, they're going to need more help.
Yeah.
And since I don't know any of those people, like, firsthand that mm-hmm. were wounded over there,
mm-hmm.
All I hear is, you know, same stuff we hear, like, mm-hmm. through the news and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like some people are getting what they deserve and what they need, and some people aren't.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still optimistic that
mm-hmm.
that one, the country cares a lot more than we used to.
Yeah,
kind of like you said.
I agree.
But there's also a lot of, I guess, like, NGOs that are helping military veterans
mm-hmm.
come back.
Yeah.
So I like to see that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But I would say I think the military, for the most part, is, like, going in a great direction.
Mm-hmm.
I know you didn't ask, but I don't have a problem with women being on submarines.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a good idea, just because, you know, women can do all the same submarining stuff that men can do.
Yeah.
And some of them can do it better.
Yeah.
So I'd rather have the more qualified person
driving
the boat while I'm sleeping.
Yeah, absolutely.
Than, you know, some guy who got on just because we didn't let women on board.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'd rather have the most qualified people serving in the military.
And it seems like it would kind of help quell that locker room mentality, sort of the vulgarity
probably,
that guys
yeah.
can get when they're together in a small space for a long time. And
I think that transition phase is going to be hard for everybody involved.
Yeah. Is there not a lot of women on submarines still today?
Just because, like, the first one? I think they got, was it last? I can't remember if it was, like, this last fall or a year ago this last spring, but it's pretty recent.
Very recent.
I think it might have been just this last fall.
Wow.
And it's just officers that mm-hmm. they're putting in. And it sounds, from everything I've heard, they actually developed a good plan.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Surface Navy actually started putting women on ships maybe in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they had some problems, and the submarine force went back and looked at what they did, learned
mm-hmm.
from their mistakes and their successes. And
mm-hmm.
is implementing, from what I understand, to be a much better program.
Yeah, that's good.
So that's good.
That's good to hear. So, yeah, that's plenty of information for me. You gave me
okay.
some really good stuff there.
Excellent.
I think this is perfect. I don't know. If there's anything else you want to talk about, that'd be great. Otherwise, I think we could call it a wrap and then...
I think we covered it.
Yeah.
But if you come with any questions afterwards, feel free to let me know.
Yeah, yeah. If I think of anything, I will email you. I don't really have any other questions. You gave me a really good portrayal of
what it's like to be in the submarine force. I think it's fascinating stuff. I don't think I have anything else for you. Like I said, there's when we submit it in a few weeks, feel free to, you can give us any artifacts or documents or pictures or anything that you would want to go with this into the archives. And then also, I'm not sure if you know it, but this, how I transcribe is totally up to you. I can paraphrase things, I can leave things out. Once I put this on my computer, I'll put it on a site called Dropbox where you can look at it there, or I can just send it to you and you can listen to it and let me know if there's anything you want me to leave out or change or whatever. It's basically totally up to you. And then we have a few sheets that we need you to sign, like a biographical data sheet, just kind of your name, birth date, I think place of origin, just the basics. And then another one for the archives that says basically, like, that's the just saying, like, when this can be released to the public or if it can be released to the public, who can view it, that kind of stuff, basically. So it's, this thing is, like, totally up to your discretion. So,
okay.
Yeah. We just, yeah. But yeah, I think this is perfect. I don't think I really have much more to ask you. You gave us some really great information.
Excellent. Glad to participate.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's really nice of you to do this. I think
pleasure.
This is really going to, see, it's interesting.